It's Fully Threaded Radio, episode 145.
So Tim and I have knowledge with regards to what we see from across North America and our distributor-based customers, as well as what we're importing from Asia, but we don't have any information on...
It's time for Fully Threaded Radio.
It is Fully Threaded Radio, voice of the FCH Sourcing Network. Yes, it's another jam-packed episode of online, on-demand, predominantly fastener-related talk radio. So if you buy, sell, manufacture, distribute, basically if you're any sort of thread merchant, you've clicked into the right place. We're very glad you're here. Hello again, everyone. Eric Dudas here joining me today, and as always... the co-host of Fully Threaded is Brian Musker. Hey, Brian, doing all right?
I'm doing really fine, thank you.
You're back from yet another international travel adventure. I'm glad you made it back. Thank you for taking care of all those fastener inventory uploads for the FCH Sourcing Network while you were on your travels. I tell you, you are a guy who knows how to juggle work and tourism better than anyone I've ever met.
Yes, not always amazingly well, and sometimes the connections in some of the hotels I was in were fairly troublesome, but we managed.
I especially liked that one morning I sent you some stuff to upload, and you shot back a photograph of some monkeys sitting on the railing of your balcony. You were, where was that, Gibraltar?
It was Gibraltar, yeah. Of all things.
Actually, I was on the line with Jay Mont over at American Imperial when I got that text, and I mentioned it to him. Apparently, he's been there before. He says, oh, make sure that he doesn't have any food in his pockets because he's been there before, too. And he said they'll actually rip you off while you're walking down the street there in Gibraltar.
Oh, and yeah, and watch out for your glasses, too.
So you had that experience, huh?
I didn't have it. No, I was warned, and I was careful to not get that close to them. But they're all over the place and quite happy to wander around among people. A strange little part of the world, that is.
And this is a strange little part of the fastener industry, everybody, but we call it home. We hope you'll enjoy it. And thank you once again for clicking in. It's episode 145 of the podcast. This time we're publishing on October 24th, 2019. I guess a little bit of tourism in the theme again today, Brian, as our feature segment involves a couple of real superstars of the industry.
Yeah.
As they travel the country on a nationwide fastener tour of sorts. Rockstar Simi, along with Star Stainless President Tim Roberto Jr., join us on the latest stop of that tour as they spread information and know-how from their perspectives as master distributors out to the industry. What's going on with pricing, material availability, that type of thing. It's really in-depth knowledge. It's a great segment.
Sounds like a sort of a screws-a-palooza.
That's exactly what it is, Bri. Yes. This travel did you well. I think we're going to use that. Also on the podcast today, we'll be speaking with London Penland of Eurolink Fastener Supply Service. You may recall London joined us previously to announce the launch of a new vlog in which he's set out to educate the fastener industry on the sometimes confusing subject of ISO standards.
And DIN standards. And how they intersect and how they don't. So it is interesting.
Many winding roads there.
Oh, yeah.
Also, Rick Peterson of All West Components joins Mike McNulty on the Fastener News Report, an interesting apparent paradox in the latest FDI readings. Although, a little bit of a spoiler here, it seems like overall the industry is still humming along. They'll cover that. And of course, Carmen Vertulo has the Fastener Training Minute. This time he addresses the subject of shear strength.
Oh, good.
And at various stops, this tour bus will dole out the usual variety of tidbits here and there. So that'll round it out. And rounding out the intro, you've got a list of our fine sponsors, don't you, Bray?
I do. The title sponsors of Fully Threaded Radio are Stelfast and Brighton Best International. Stelfast, for service you deserve and people you trust. Brighton Best International, tested, tried, and true. Also sponsoring Fully Threaded Radio are Buckeye Fasteners, BTM Manufacturing, Eurolink Fastener Supply Service, InSequel Software, ND Industries, Parker Fasteners, Vault Industrial Plastics, The Worth Group, and Solution Industries, home of Solution Man. So thanks to all our sponsors, and if you listen to Fully Threaded Radio, then you know that you can rely on these great people to provide you with good products, okay? Use them.
Thank you, sir. We mention it on every episode, but these companies truly bring you the podcast. We couldn't do it without them and without you listening in. So thank you once again as well.
Yep.
Get with us anytime. The email address is ftr@fullythreaded.com. And we spend a little bit of time out there on Twitter, some of us more than others, but the handle there is Fully Threaded. Hey, Bry, last episode we talked quite a bit about the Vegas show, and there was a lot of follow-up, a lot of feedback to that episode. And one follow-up question was, what was the big reveal that Jake Davis of BTM Manufacturing was referring to? I guess that really was mentioned at the top of the episode, and then it was never followed up on. Somebody was curious, and I checked into that, and the big reveal was that everyone knows by now BTM is becoming famous for its U-Bolt blend coffee. And he's been offering that at his booth for a couple of shows now.
Yep.
Well, at the last IFE, he introduced the K-Cup pod version of the U-Bolt blend. So that was the big reveal.
Wow. He's getting sort of serious then. This is not like some street vendor.
I mean, it's true. First the Zarfs.
I know.
Now the K-Cup.
I know. I'm getting worried.
Don't get worried. It's good stuff, man.
Remember U-Bolts, Jake, okay?
You're not a big fan of those coffee makers that they have in all of the hotels and stuff, are you?
No. And my view, they invariably don't work, or the instructions to make them work are so complicated you can't read them at 6 o'clock in the morning. And one was in our room when we were staying in the hotel in Las Vegas. That didn't work at all.
That's weird, because we never have coffee pots in our room in Vegas. I thought that was a thing there. They don't supply them.
This one did.
Hmm. Did you upgrade to a suite?
No. No.
I'm going to see the charge eventually.
I know you will. But yeah. I did ask them to split it up.
Well, I'm not the biggest fan of those machines either for a variety of reasons, but I will say that when you need one and it is in your room, it does come in handy. And I have figured it out, although there have been times when they drive you a little crazy. It's like you need an electrical engineering degree sometimes, it seems like, to work them. Well, anyway, BTM U-Bolt Blend Coffee, now available and convenient for some people, K-Cup pods.
I prefer just the ground-up stuff. Thanks, Jake. Okay.
Yeah, and an old-style drip percolator pot. Was that what you were going to say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fortunately, we're producing this podcast for an industry where probably a large part of the audience can identify with that, which I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's probably true, Rye.
Yeah. Well, the office coffee pot. Okay. That's how it sort of worked.
Used to in simpler times. Well, in simpler times, we didn't have things like podcasts or Twitter or LinkedIn, speaking of which. Saw a LinkedIn post fly by the other day from Ken Schneelock, the Schnee. A lot of you guys out there in the East know him. On his LinkedIn post here, he reminded everybody that you can always get out to ND Industries and contact them for a free product sample. And in this case, the product is ND Patch High Temp, serving up the hottest nylon temperature resistance in the industry.
Wow.
Do you know how hot it resists against, Bry?
No, you can tell me.
It's a trick question.
Okay, tell me.
It's pretty hot. 500 Fahrenheit.
Wow. That's higher than paper burns at. Fahrenheit 451?
I really don't know. But I do know that ND Industries has the hottest nylon temperature resistance in the industry, Bry. And they're our sponsors, so... Cool. Thank you to the Schnee.
Another reason to follow up on our sponsors, okay? See, they do great things.
And if we kept going, we'd come up with more. But we're going to break it off right there for just a moment, folks. And thank you once again for listening to the podcast.
Yep.
We'll be back in mere moments to put a wrench to this one. It's Fully Threaded.
When people think Fastener Talk Radio, they think, huh. But then they think of Fully Threaded Radio. Talk radio for the fastener industry.
Need fasteners? Fully Threaded Radio listeners know that Stealthfast offers over 12,000 fastener items direct from stock, including bolts, cap screws, nuts, screws, and washers in a variety of finishes. Per print, specials, and standards, Stealthfast has been a global sourcing leader since 1972. As an ISO-certified supplier with facilities across North America and Asia, each member of the Stealthfast team is dedicated to supporting fastener distributors with the highest quality products and service possible. That's why the motto remains, for service you deserve and people you trust, it's Stealthfast.
At Bright & Best, we continue to expand our wide range of products, including stainless steel and metric fasteners. Our family of brands include Preferred, US Anchor, and Ironclad Performance Wear. BBI has been a trusted partner since 1925. With award-winning hand tools, gloves, and drywall screws, BBI is the largest master distributor of fasteners in the USA. Tested, tried, and true. We are Bright & Best. To learn more about Bright & Best, visit brightandbest.com.
Are you tired of empty promises from software vendors? Are you paying for support that you're not receiving? Is it time for another paid upgrade? There is a solution. InSQL delivers quality software designed for the fastener industry at an affordable price with industry-leading support. Unlike other software companies, with InSQL, you purchase your software once. There will never be a paid upgrade. If you need assistance with anything, InSQL is there to help. When you call, you will always speak with a real person offering you quick and knowledgeable answers to your questions. Can your current provider say this? Quality software, affordable pricing, industry-leading support. Only InSQL can deliver all three. So why settle? Call InSQL Software at 877-446-9775 or visit www.inxsql.com.
Hi, this is Dave, the voice of Buckeye Fasteners and Old Rusty Bolt Beer, the preferred beer of the traveling salesman. And you are listening to Fully Threaded Radio.
Hey, Bray, I'm sure it's no surprise you saw this headline fly by. The Wirth Group has made another acquisition, this time Fastco.
Yeah, I saw that, actually. Very unusual for me to see something on Twitter.
That train just keeps on rolling. Mike McNulty will have details during the Fastener News Report. That's the next segment. Welcome back, everybody. This Screwsapalooza keeps rolling along, too. Good job on that, Bry. I like that.
Really? Don't know where I dreamed it up from. Maybe it was from because I live in Chicago.
How do you do it, man? Brian and Eric back with you. Well, in the vein of continuing the tour bus rolling, we've got another example of something that's happening in the fastener world that's educational, entertaining, ongoing, therefore a prime target for the Fully Threaded audience. You might remember a couple episodes back, we had London Penland from Eurolink with us, and he was setting out to pass along some much-needed ISO know-how to the industry, and he's been driving that along. Hey, London, you're out there, aren't you?
Hey, yeah, guys, I'm here. Can you hear me just fine? Yep. All right. Hey, so I've been working on getting this vlog series going. We're about 5 episodes into it right now, and we should be releasing the 6th one tomorrow.
So do you have any feedback? As this is an industry that's immune to feedback, I might tell you, but do you have any feedback from people? I mean, are people actually using your wisdom?
Yeah. Surprisingly, I think more than I expected to start. I mean, I knew it'd be a slow start trying to get something like a vlog going, you know. But I've actually gotten a lot of contacts and people calling me and sent some emails saying that, hey, you know, we've got some new guys and I really like what you're doing, or where can we see your stuff? And some of the companies out there have blocks on YouTube. So, you know, so we have to send them to like our website or something like that. But it's been good. We've been getting, receiving a lot of good feedback on it.
Good. Yeah. Just to rewind all this, Eurolink Fastener Supply Service is the place to go when you're in search of hard to locate fasteners, especially the metric stuff. Craig Penland's been on the show a bunch of times. Of course, you were on, what was it, 2 episodes ago, London?
Yeah, 2 or 3 ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys hatched this idea, and it's a whole campaign that you're running, ISO. So you're in search of stuff, but you're also the International Standards Organization. And you guys are constantly sorting out questions that your customers have about the crossover of the standards and all that stuff. And before we started recording today, we also revisited the whole idea about what makes you a good guy to be doing this. And you were a public school teacher, right? You were involved in, what was it, chemistry?
Yes, sir. Yeah, biology, chemistry, and anatomy and physiology. Teaching at the high school level, you know, teaching 10th, 11th, and 12th grade kids.
Good. Well, that could put you in a great position to be able to teach us. So, you know, we have been dealing with, I guess, the not necessarily the inconsistencies, but the inconsistencies in the knowledge about the DIN and ISO standards ever since we started FCH, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's out there in abundance, the ambiguity and stuff. I mean, as we'll discuss in a minute here, since like, what, 1987, there's been all these pronouncements that have kind of somewhat gone by the wayside, confusing things. But like this latest video, I don't know if it's the latest one, but one of them I was looking at in your ISO series, your vlog, you had this, I thought it was a pretty funny way of starting. You said, all right, now we're going to have a moment of silence for DIN 931 and 933.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Was that like a technique that you used in your classes? I mean, did the high school kids, were they receptive to that?
Yeah. So actually, yeah. So I actually developed lesson plans for each of these videos that I make, just like I did back when I was a high school teacher. And so the lesson plans are based on what's called a 4E model. I won't go into all the educational theory on it, but the lesson plans, you can actually find them to download. I actually put them up for you guys to download if you need something like that. But yeah, so the first part of each lesson is what I call engage. And so, you know, I just try to have a little quip or something like that to get your attention and, you know, and make it interesting and funny. You know, I mean, we're talking about nuts, bolts, and screws, and I'm a nerd, but, you know, not everybody is as nerdy as I am. You know?
Yeah, but you're a bearded nerd on video,
that is
so
true.
That's a cool thing now.
I guess so, man. Me and Baron and some other guys are representing those red beards out there, huh?
Yeah, well, that's a whole different thing. I didn't know we were going to get into that, but I noticed even on your on your YouTube video, you had a hashtag. It had some reference to a beard, and of course, we had that fun thing going on Twitter recently where it was definitely Baron, and I think your
Baron.
Dad.
Yeah.
Did Craig get you into this whole beard thing, or was that independent? How'd that go?
Well, it's a talking about the little bearded dispute on Twitter, or like the bearded thing in general? Just
the fact that the general one, the fact that you actually grow one.
So I guess it's a family thing. I mean, even my little brother, Kelly, which, you know, he's been around the company a bit. Even he had a big red beard. And honestly, it's such a staple to our family that like, if he trims his big red beard, which he has, cause he's gotten a girlfriend recently, like we ask him, we'll say, hey, are you okay? Like, is everything all right? You know, like. And we worry about him if you trim the beard too.
Yeah. Well, there's a few of you guys out there. Chris, of course, from R&D, and there used to be a guy who was over at Solution, and I don't remember his name. He was a nice guy. I don't know if he's still there, but they're out there. So it's like a whole society of you guys. We should give it a name. It should be how about the Yosemite Society?
Man, you can't say that. My wife is literally trying to make me Yosemite Sam for Halloween, man. Like, see this?
Oh my god. Do we need that?
too obvious, man.
Yeah. So then tell us about DIN 933 and 931 then, and why you don't like them at all.
Well, Interestingly enough, it's funny you mentioned 1987, because it was, I think, like 1986, 1987, that technically DIN 933 and 931 by international standards was supposed to be in the process of withdrawal, and it was supposed to be formally withdrawn by the end of 1991.
Yeah, see, I knew all that. I picked all that up off your educational video, London.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's why I thought it was kind of funny to start with, you know, a moment of silence for it as if it were dead, but it obviously isn't. Obviously, it's, you know, still on the shelves, particularly here in the States. But, you know, DIN is a German standard. It's a standard that's specifically for that one nation. And so the point of ISO was to create a international standard that is applicable, you know, around the world. So that way, obviously, for supply reasons, when we go to replace a part, regardless of what country it's in or what country it's being manufactured in, it would meet that standard, you know? And so that was kind of the reason. Now, as far as what, you know, as far as the numbers they use and all, I couldn't tell you exactly. I haven't gotten that far into it yet, but with 933 and 931, that, you know, there is this overlap between, you know, that DIN 933 is going to meet the standards of an ISO 4017, and a DIN 931 is going to meet the standards of an ISO 4014 with a few exceptions.
Okay, so but why did we really need a whole new set of standards? I mean, why couldn't we just use the DIN standards? Is it really the real reason, in my view, is this? Because the ISO is run by the French, where they really call it the IOSI, and they would do anything to avoid using anything developed by the Germans.
Well, I'll be honest with you.
I'm telling you, this is a joke, okay?
Oh, okay.
But there could be something behind it, okay?
Probably. It would make sense that the French were behind something like that. That'd be interesting.
Well, they control the measurements, okay? I mean, the standard for the kilogram and the meter is in Paris, not anywhere else. And they developed those, actually. So, No, that was my joke. I understand that ISO wanted to be in charge of these things. Why couldn't it's called ISO 933? There's something you'll have to just do some background on this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, who knows why?
Okay, well, none of us know why. Somewhere there's a story. But is the ISO version functionally equivalent, or does it have a different size head? What's the difference?
Well, it's going to be functionally equivalent at pretty much every size except for certain diameters. At the 10, 12, 14, and 22 diameters, there are some slight differences, like in the width across the flats, for example. So, for the M10, 12, and 14, the width across the flats is actually slightly smaller for the ISO standard than the DIN standard. I think it's only by about 1 millimeter. So for some applications, that might not be a problem. But for some applications that have lower tolerances, that can really be an issue. So you would definitely need to be able to specify whether or not you need a DIN 933 or an ISO 4017. And then at the 22, the width across the flats is actually, I believe, slightly larger. I think it's two millimeters larger for the ISO 4017 than on the DIN 933. So, and that's really the main difference. Also, when we went to ISO, we increased the range. So from with DIN 933 and DIN 931, the standard range was from a 1.6 to a 52. And whereas with the ISO 4014 4017, that they extended that to M64. So we extended the range of the diameters when we went to ISO as well.
Okay. So then in Eurolink's experience, what's the ratio of people who will really request an ISO 4014 versus a DIN 930, whatever one it is, 103, okay?
Yeah, so 4014 would be 931. Those are the partial. And as far as the ratio, it's hard to say exactly. I mean, you know, being in the States, I mean, the majority is definitely still using the DINs, you know. It's just that sometimes we'll get people that will send us over, like, say, an M8 ISO 4017. And, you know, and then we can quote them a DIN 933 on that. You know, they don't really realize that that's not necessarily, you know, depending on the length and all that, that's not necessarily like this super hard to find part, you know, but, you know, I mean, but at those sizes like 10, 12, 14, and 22, that actually does make a big difference. So as far to answer your question directly, like what is the ratio? I mean, maybe like still probably 2/3 are asking for it in DIN, and maybe a third in ISOs. But I could be way off on that. It's hard to say exactly. Yeah.
Right. I mean, we sort of run our own stats and stuff like that. And if you go, I used to tell people years ago now that the ratio of ISO searches to DIN searches was about 10% to 90.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Through FCH you're talking?
Yeah, and FCH. It used to be, that was when we started off, because we introduced all the DIN stuff really early and ISO stuff. But now it's gone up considerably. So the ratio now is, you know, like 60 to 40 or say 70 wow. to 30. It's gone, this is ISO stuff has gone up considerably.
And you're saying that's your data from FCH, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, so I would imagine that's pretty good data for that.
I would think anything from FCH is very good, including the data.
Of course. Okay?
But those search engine data I'm just happy that my rough estimate seems to fall in that range that you guys
are right, saying. It is. No, that's about it's about right. And it's been an interesting change to watch, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, London, you're doing a series of these videos. I'm wondering, did this DIN 933, 931 video result from a customer interaction? Is that how you're getting the ideas for these, the topics, or how are you developing them?
Well, yes and no. Yes, definitely. All of this stuff is based on customer interactions. And I tend to include a little bit of that in some of my videos. As far as the prioritization and how we're releasing it, I think we started with pretty much hex bolts. Right now we're going into our washer series. We're kind of breaking it down into categories. And so, you know, and as we continue, we're going to continue this washer series, then we'll probably go into, you know, maybe a set screw series or something, you know, or things like that, where I try to kind of group it in these series. We actually just updated it on our website, that if you go to our website and you click on news and you go down to the blog, you'll see that it's kind of the layout of it has changed. And that's so that it's all in order and it's just really user friendly so people can see those series essentially.
Well, let's drop in there that the website for that information is EuroLinkFSS.com, stands for Fastener Supply Service, EuroLinkFSS.com.
Yeah, man. And if you go, like I said, if you go there, I think at the bottom of our homepage, you'll see that's where we always put our most recent video. You'll see that you'll see me down there at the bottom waving. And then, like I said, if you go over to news and you click on the vlog, then it'll take you to where you can see all the videos. You might notice a difference in my videos as far as the camera angle and all of a sudden, Craig actually hooked me up with some actual recording gear. So it looks like we're kind of taking it a little bit more seriously as we go and then trying to improve this thing. I think the thing was that he started seeing more traffic on the website and on our social media pages. So now he's like, "Oh, hey, let's get this thing going." You know, so.
Well, maybe this stuff does work after all.
Yeah, maybe. I'd like to think so.
Yeah, right.
I'll talk to you offline. Well, it is an art form as well as an educational platform. And if you look at anybody who's out there doing anything in particular out here in the social media jungle, you see that the work evolves and you do things yes. and you try them and you change them and you fail a lot and you flail a lot, but you also get a few messages out. So it'll be interesting to watch how yours evolve. The first ones are entertaining, let's face it, simply because you got this big floppy beard flopping around out there, and I just keep wondering if a piece of pizza is going to fall out of it, frankly. But I don't watch a lot of vlogs. You know, I know that's pretty commonplace today. It's a lot, yeah. Right? I mean, there's a lot of Yosemite Society guys out there doing it.
There are, man, I guess. And I will say that I do think, particularly on the first video, which arguably I think, it, to be honest, is my worst, that first video, I'm pretty sure like about half of the views came in simply because of the beard. That was kind of the main attractant to that one.
Yeah, well, you've got a look, you know, but you've got more. You've got a lot of content, and you've got a built-in audience because you're doing something that not everybody's doing. You have a niche. You've got a lot going for this project, and we're watching this whole vlog thing. Do you have anything that's coming down the pike that you can tease for us right now? I mean, what are some of your other ideas for developing all this?
Well, as we develop, so you'll notice that after we went through hex heads, we started talking about structural bolts a bit, and then, you know, my very last one, like I said, was on flat washers, talking about DIN 125. That one also allowed me to start exploring some things beyond just dimensions that we, you know, in the DIN 125 to 7089, 7090 video, you know, I started talking about hardness, and I'm going to get back to where I'm going with this in a second, but you know, with those hardnesses, a lot of people don't realize that if you're dealing with 8.8 material, that I forgot the standard off the top of my head, but that the set that it's actually supposed to have a 200 hardness washer on it, and that with 10.9 and 12.9 material, you should have about 300 hardness washer, and that was part of the reason to the change with the ISIS 7089 7090, whereas the DIN 125 was only 140 HV hardness. You know, and so what I'm getting at is that. That allowed me to explore some other things beyond just dimensions. And as we move forward with this series, I'd like to get a little bit deeper into it. The struggle is trying to, you know, and I'm sure you guys are very familiar with this struggle, is trying to get that content and boil it down into its most basic parts so I can get it to fit into a certain time period. And so as we move forward, you know, like I said, right now we're in our washer series. So, you know, I'll be honest with you, I haven't even decided what washer I'm going to do tomorrow. I'm going to which one I kind of break it down based upon those categories, like I said earlier, but the I'll be coming up with that lesson plan later today. But you know, I want to get a little bit more into the details as we go on, and then possibly later down the road come back and do maybe like a more advanced level video of some of the ones that I've done here at the beginning. I try to keep it pretty simple, and then, you know, down the road have maybe like a more advanced courses and stuff.
Sounds like a good idea to me. Okay. Because this is a world where there's, you know, there's people who are just coming into the industry, and there's people who've been here for many years, and a lot of them are a little confused about these metric standards.
That's because it is confusing.
Yeah. So if you've had to deal with these bloody, you know, American standards for years, you realize these metric standards is like walking into paradise after you deal with 50 different types of grades of steel and all that crap.
Yeah.
So again, the website is EuroLinkFSS.com, but also you can pick these up out on YouTube too, right?
You can. So we put these on, we've got a YouTube page that you can subscribe to. Got on our website. We also put them out on our LinkedIn page. I put them out on my personal LinkedIn page, so the business and my personal. We also put them out on our Facebook. It's funny because a lot of just my friends on Facebook and local people are watching these videos and learning things, and I'm like, you guys aren't even in the fastener industry. Like, okay, yeah. So they'll be like, oh, I learned so much, and I'm like, really? Okay. Well.
Good. It's amazing how many people are interested in predominantly fastener-related content. Yeah, we've discovered that too.
yeah, I am actually interested. I was pretty surprised by that. But yeah, man. So yeah, we've got some different places. I mean, I guess I'd like to figure out how to make sure that people that are working for some of these companies that have YouTube on block, that make sure that they are able to see it. I'm hoping, I guess, that if it's on our website, they're able to see it. You know, I have to talk with some of these guys to see where they can, because, you know, I want to make sure that everybody is able to have access to it, regardless of whether or not your company has it on block.
Good luck with that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mind if I plug a couple things real quick here?
Well, what is it that you have to plug, London?
Well, if you go, like I said, on our website, yeah, if on our website,
what if we
here,
said no?
Then I wouldn't have. I would have respected it, man. You know, I would have respected it. But you might.
Well, thank you for asking. I think that's, man, the first time anyone ever asked on the podcast, which is great.
Oh, I'm just trying to be considerate. I don't know. You might notice on our website that the Eurolink symbol is pink right now. And the reason for that is because we are raising money for the National Breast Cancer Foundation. So on our website and at the bottom, there's a link of all of our emails that we're fundraising for National Breast Cancer Foundation. So you know,
okay,
we are still
very good.
Looking. Yeah, we're still looking to raise money for that. That's all through the month of October, that a portion of our sales is going to be donated. And then all of the money that's donated there is going to be there. Also, if you give more than $25, I think we still have some t-shirts, some Breast Cancer Foundation t-shirts that we're giving away. And then next month in November, on November 15th, Eurolink is sponsoring the Switch Gala. Switch is a nonprofit that is working against sex trafficking. And so we're sponsoring a gala event for a fundraiser for them as well. So just something that if you are in the local area, something to look out for.
Thank you for that, London. I got to say this about Eurolink. You are guys who are very easy to do business with. You have a lot of knowledge. You also have a conscience. So good for you. Keep up the good work.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
All right.
And I'll ask you one more question before we let this bus drive off for another segment, which we will revisit down the line too, London. You're definitely coming back in a few episodes to keep us advised of what you're doing with this series. But we were talking about this Twitter dialogue that was going on a couple days back regarding this industry-wide beard contest or pageant, shall we call it?
Better.
Yeah. I'm liking how it's unfolding here. And I do like this Yosemite Society angle to it. Now, what I'm wondering is, you're a guy who could probably help us figure out what kind of prizes should we be looking at for this event?
Ooh, for this Red Beard event.
What do we do?
I think that we should have one. Or not just red beards, you know, all bearded. We don't discriminate against beards.
There's a few white ones out there too.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And so I, you know, a good beard balm, you know, that's always helpful. And maybe a nice beard, you know, one of those trimmers, like some good trimmers, you know, that'd be a good one, I think. And you don't want too big of trimmers. You know, we're not going for small beards. You know, you gotta get that thing grown out, you know. So I think that'd be your two hot ones there.
Those are logical. I'm looking for the branding opportunities though.
Oh.
Is there any kind of a giant beard do-rag that you could kind of have some branding on there?
Giant beard dude.
I don't know. We're going to look into that. We're going to get Linda.
We do. We should
jump in on that. Yeah. You know, she did such a good job with the fastener dog biscuits that we had that one year, Bri.
Yeah, I know.
Well, us bearded folk do love biscuits, man. It gets in our beard and we just save it for later. Yeah.
I knew
you'd have a problem with Vegemite too, I can tell.
Well, London Penland, there's a lot of ideas on all sides of this angle that we look forward to discussing with you down the road, and we look forward to seeing more from your vlog series, EurolinkFSS.com, for more on that. It's been great to talk to you again.
Yes, guys, thank you very much for having me. Please do check out the blog if you haven't already, and thanks again.
That's all right.
Talk to you in a bit, folks. It's Fully Threaded.
They're like more cowbell for the fastener industry. Brian and Eric. Fully Threaded Radio.
Hey mates, Brian Muscat. Regardless of the required size, material or finish, Eurolink has the European resources to meet your demands for hard-to-find metric fasteners. We're the one-stop source for all of your metric needs, saving you time and money searching for these parts while fulfilling all of your requirements. How do we do it? Eurolink offers access to more than 100,000 quality C-class parts with the ability to solve your toughest metric fastener supply issues every time. Hard-to-find metric fasteners? Delivered. Just think of us as your heavy metal rock stars. To learn more about how we can rock your world or request a hassle-free quote online, visit EurolinkFSS.com. That's EurolinkFSS.com.
Brighton Best, we continue to expand our wide range of products, including stainless steel and metric fasteners. Our family of brands include Preferred, US Anchor, and Ironclad Performance Wear. BBI has been a trusted partner since 1925. With award-winning hand tools, gloves, and drywall screws, BBI is the largest master distributor of fasteners in the USA. Tested, tried, and true. We are Brighton Best. To learn more about Brighton Best, visit brightonbest.com.
Parker Fasteners is your premier cold-heading manufacturer, forging the future with precision and quality as our top priority. When you think of domestically produced sockets and tamper-proof screws from alloy and stainless, including A286, think Parker Fasteners. Our lockout line of security fasteners feature high-torque, oval center pin design, and unique lobes that provide one-of-a-kind security for your customers. Our in-house 3D printing capability makes the prototyping process fast and affordable, and we're ready to produce your large or small run orders with highly competitive pricing and unbeatable lead times. So, forge the future with Parker Fasteners. Visit Parker Fasteners online today at parkerfasteners.com.
I know my customers' yearly usage, but I don't have the warehouse space to store it.
Solution Man can submit a blanket order, and I'll not only set up release dates, I'll offer you bulk pricing too. Visit the Solution Industries website for details at solutionind.com.
You're my fastener superhero.
Just doing my job, ma'am.
S-O-L-U-T-I-O-N, S-O-L-U-T-I-O-N.
Solution Industries. We are Solution.
This is George Hunt III from Brighton Best International, and you're listening to Fully Threaded Radio.
Brian and Eric back with you, kind of like a couple of fastener industry tour groupies in a way.
Oh yes, I definitely am a tour groupie. Okay,
waiting for today's feature segment. It's going to be great. But this is the news segment, and it's going to be great too. This is where we patiently wait. Mike McNulty, this time joined by Rick Peterson.
Good. Yeah, I look forward to them trying to tell us what this strange connection between the PMI and the FDI is. That's been weird for a couple of months or 3 months now.
Yeah, well, that seems to be one of the eternal questions about the Fastener Distributor Index. But I think this time they're really going to also discuss the divergent total FDI number and then the forward-looking indicator number, which are going in opposite directions, weirdly. We'll get to that soon, folks. And it's all sponsored by Volt Industrial Plastics. And of course, the title sponsors of Fully Threaded Radio are Stelfast and Brighton Best International. One other piece of follow-up news, Bri, that we have from the International Fastener Expo episode.
Yeah.
I actually didn't hear about this until we put that show in the can. But good news for Solution Industries fans, because bobblehead John Riddell is back.
I heard that, actually. Yes.
Yeah, now we're not talking about the actual flesh and blood John Riddell. We're talking about the bobblehead version. Let's not get misinterpreted here, everybody. You could tell one from the other because, well, John's much taller. The real John is.
So is it an exact copy?
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good. Laura Vath over there, she takes pretty good care of that kind of stuff. She's a stickler for details.
Yeah, I know. All the crap that went out when it disappeared last year.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying that the stolen bobblehead was recovered, but we have a replacement, I believe is actually what's happening here. But he was unveiled at the Vegas show, and I'm pretty sure that there's a photo of it out on Twitter if you really want to see it, but we can breathe easy now knowing that somewhere, probably sitting on John's desk, is the Solution bobblehead.
Thank God for that. Everything's in order in the world again, okay?
Yeah, he's got to chip that thing. If this ever happens again, you know, we'll...
Yeah, right.
Remember LoJack? Should yeah. low jack it. They don't need those anymore, but.
Right. Or just not bring it out in public. Okay.
Well, the fastener industry demands its bobblehead. He'll have another opportunity to break it out come March 4th through the 6th, 2020. Why?
Yeah,
because
why?
Those are the right. Why? Because those are the dates of the PAC West Tabletop Show. It's happening out at the Westin Long Beach in beautiful Long Beach, California.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Beauty, of course, in the eye of the beholder, Bri.
Yeah.
But this will be another of the joint conferences / tabletop shows. This one along with the NFDA. They did it mm-hmm. together before and turned out so well. They're doing it again. I talked with Kevin Chavez of the PAC West, and he said that during their recent board meeting, there was some talk about getting a port tour together for this, which would be super cool because, I mean, that's the highlight of that city, right? You look out on the ocean front and these amazing ports are out there. I would love to see those up close.
And you can see the Queen Mary too. And once upon a time, you could have seen Spruce Goose.
Queen Mary's still there.
Yeah.
And so will a good part of the fastener industry. So,
yeah, it was a great show last time.
Yep, they do a good job and definitely something to put on the calendar at the beginning of March 2020, the PAC West Tabletop. Passing the info to you folks, a few headlines that Mike McNulty probably won't be covering in his report today. However, he'll have lots of good stuff as he joins us now.
For news about screws that you can use, here's Mike McNulty. Totally focused on the fastener industry again.
Totally, man.
Thanks, Eric and Brian. This is Mike McNulty from Fastener Technology International Magazine, bringing you the Fastener News Report, which is sponsored by Volt Industrial Plastics, makers of the world's finest plastic fasteners. Beautiful leaves are falling quickly here in Ohio, as are the playoff chances for the Cleveland Browns and the chances of anyone in the NBA or its corporate cronies behaving like freedom-valuing Americans. But I am still focused on fasteners and ready to deliver today's Fastener News Report. In this episode, Rick Peterson of All West Components and Fasteners joins us to reveal the latest results of the Fastener Distributor Index, also known as the FDI. Also in today's broadcast, we have our top story on Worth Industry North America, as well as newsmaker headlines from several industry leaders, including Agrati Group, Wind Supply, Wesco, Hillman, The Worth Group, and Haig Fasteners. On the back page report, we're going to talk about the USA fastener market. We will get to all of that and the latest FDI results right after this.
There's a reason Volt Industrial Plastics is an industry leader in plastic clip, clamp, and custom fastener manufacturing. With over 100 million parts in stock that can be shipped the same day, Volt has some of the fastest lead times in the industry. Volt can do color. We have the capability of molding over 120 different materials and can color match for specific applications. You need it? We can build it. At Volt, we have state-of-the-art technology to build prototypes to customer specs. And although some companies provide similar products, we offer customer service that's second to none, setting us apart from our competition. And now available, Volt's new light-duty cable clamps. With maximum diameters ranging from 3/16 to a half inch, these clamps are ideal for hard-to-reach spaces, electronics, and finish work. They prevent corrosion with metal tubing, and with plastic tubing, they won't bind or warp, preventing leaks while maintaining the flow of liquids. Volt Industrial Plastics, the finest, fastest plastic fasteners in the world. Visit us at voltplastics.com.
BTM Manufacturing is a domestic ISO 9001 manufacturer of threaded fasteners and bent wire products. From anchor bolts to studs to U-bolts, BTM is committed to making your per-print special with the highest quality standards while meeting your on-time delivery schedule. Since BTM began in 1961, this family-owned business has remained focused on providing exceptional service to their customers. Centrally located in Kansas City, Missouri, BTM recently expanded into a 100,000-square-foot facility, which allows for the production and manufacture of many projects simultaneously, both large and small quantity. BTM's website at btm-mfg.com allows you to submit custom quotes quickly and easily, and once you do, a BTM team member will contact you as soon as possible to discuss your needs. Are you ready to get started? BTM is. Visit www.btm-mfg.com today.
You're listening to Mike McNulty's Fastener News Report on Fully Threaded Radio.
The seasonally adjusted fastener distributor index for September was 56.0 versus August result of 55.9. Fastener distributor index data is collected and analyzed by the FCH Sourcing Network, the National Fasteners Distributor Association, and Baird. The FDI seeks to identify demand, pricing, and outlook trends within the American fastener distribution industry. To get some insight on these results, we talked to Rick Peterson, CEO of All West Components and Fasteners, the immediate past president of Pacific West Fastener Association, and a past president of STAFTA. Hi, Rick. Thanks for joining us on the Fastener News Report.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning to you. What do you think about the latest FDI results?
Actually, not a surprise. It's pretty much what I had expected. I am pleased the number is strongly positive. It's pretty much what we're seeing up here in the Pacific Northwest. So, yeah, no surprises there.
Yeah, we've had stabilizing of the FDI after taking some dipping down into sub 50 territory, which, and for new listeners, the 50.0 mark is the level delineating between growth and declining markets. But back in June, we dropped below 50 for the first time in a long time, but we've been above it and holding steady above 55 mark for a while. So that is a good indicator.
I didn't like the direction of that graph there for a few months.
Yeah, but things have stabilized. But on the flip side, the forward-looking indicator, you know, had two consecutive months of modest improvement, but now it's dropped down to 44.0 versus 48.0 last month. And that's
I think there's a lot of, you go to all the conferences, you talk to all the people, same as I do, and I think a lot of talking about recession, a lot of people are talking upcoming recession, and I don't know how much of that is coming from the morning TV shows or from what they're seeing in their businesses, but you know, the people that we're talking to at these conferences are all smart people, and most of them run their own business for decades now, a lot of them, and this ain't their first rodeo. A lot of us feel a recession coming.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the morning talk shows, and if you spend a lot of time there or the evening talk shows, you'd be in desperation by the end of the week. But, I mean, you know, I didn't hear a lot of doom and gloom at the latest show that I was at, which was the Las Vegas show. I thought it was, you know, it's pretty good, pretty stable, which kind of reflects what's going on with the FDI. But you mentioned that you guys are expecting a recession. Is any certain time frame or?
Well, just my personal opinion. Outlook.
Yeah.
And I'm not an educated economist, but I've been in this business for 50 years now, and I've been through several recessions. And I just seeing what's happening with my customers' inventory in particular, the squeeze is on down, you know, lower the inventory, lower the delivery quantities. And
yeah, and we've had a 10-year
expansion. 2008.
Yeah, we've been expanding pretty much since 2009. So,
yeah, I think a lot of our customers are also expecting a downturn, and so the squeeze is on the inventory, that's for sure. And I think that's a very good forward-looking indicator in itself.
Yeah, the other thing that caught my attention on the numbers for the FDI in September were that employment dropped down. And it was probably the lowest level since February, where it had, you know, March through August had pretty strong numbers, but it's dipping down to the 51.6 line. So that would maybe tie in too. People are slowing down and hiring, tying in with your inventory comment. Are you hearing the same thing or seeing anything about employment?
Yeah, that plays into the confidence, huh? When you see less hiring pressure, that's another good forward-looking indicator.
Right.
And one thing that we need to keep in mind, of course, is the regional and the market sector impacts on employment. So if I'm sitting in Boise, for example, or Topeka, they're going to have different experiences on what their hiring demands are. So obviously this is a national poll, so we need to keep that in mind. I mean, every little pocket geographically has its own problems, not only on that, but on inventory demands by the customers and everything else. So, but yeah, overall, we've seen the same thing. In my company, we've kind of gone, in the opposite direction. We've been feeling understaffed for some time, so we just added two salespeople.
And, well, that's good.
Yeah. And I learned something when I was a young lad from a fellow that I really respected that owned a large fastener company. He was a friend of mine, and he explained to me that his philosophy was when a recession is coming, all his competitors fire their salespeople and he hires them.
And, right.
And on the other end,
the
other end of the recession, he owns more of the market share. So, I mean, that's kind of my philosophy too.
Yeah. It's like a, you know, attack at the, when people are vulnerable.
That's right.
Yeah. So in summary, the forward-looking indicator number was 44 versus 48 last month. And I want to make a comment that this is the lowest FLI reading since January of 2016, which is almost 4 years ago. And it's the eighth sub-50 reading in the last 9 months. So things are definitely slowing down, slower growth and or recession coming to coming down the pike. But, you know, you got to have some rainy weather with the sunny weather, right?
That's right. And I think that those numbers you just discussed, Mike, are very, very important. I think everybody should be paying attention to the FLI.
Right. The six-month outlook deteriorated with 45% of the people now expecting lower activity 6 months from now, which is a pretty almost half, and 32% expecting similar activity and only 20% expecting higher activity. But I will point out, you know, the silver lining is we are at a high level compared to 10 years ago. So that's we're you know, fluctuating down from a good point.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because when you're rocking, I mean, to have 20% people say that they expect to go higher, well, that's pretty strong when you're at a peak.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. All right, let's move on to the comments from the people who were surveyed. We had feedback was mixed this month. One respondent commented, nothing in the economic sources used in the industry that indicate a change to slower growth rate until the second half of 2020. So that's a little bit longer outlook. And then another person commented on destocking occurring at some master importer branches, noting, quote, we are seeing some of the master importer distributors not stocking as much at one location. While they may have it, we're always having to bring in parts from various branches, adding to the cost of goods sold with additional freight. So it's kind of like moving the inventory down to the one step down the chain, I guess.
Yes, and of course, as a distributor, we don't have that same luxury.
Yeah, right. You get caught in the middle.
That's right.
And then the last comment was kind of a weird one. I haven't figured it out, and I tried to do some research, but it says, quote, get ready for the storm 2025, millennial 70 storm. Does that mean anything to you?
No, I'm completely baffled by that one. Somebody's making up his own economic language, I think.
Right. I was looking, doing research on, you know, what the millennial 70 meant, and turned up nothing. And so it was a little amusing, I guess.
maybe that's the projected date, 2025, when the millennials take my job.
Yeah, or that they're going to be 70% of the population, but I can't believe that's true unless they really stretch the bracket for millennials.
So, okay.
I think we're going to have more older people than younger, which is part of the demographic problem, but that's a whole other issue.
maybe this guy meant that the millennials is going to be paying 70% of the taxes.
There you go. That's all right. They can pick up the slack. All right. Well, good. Well, you know, thanks for your insights on the FDI. But before we wrap it up, I wanted to give you the chance to tell us anything going on new at All West or at the Pacific West Association.
PAC West is doing very, very well. In fact, we had a teleconference board meeting yesterday, and everybody's upbeat. I can genuinely say it's the best PAC West board I've ever served on. Just top-notch people.
Nice.
Not only the veterans on the board, but also the new group coming in. And so it was, you know, very lively board meeting yesterday. Financially, we're doing well. We're helping to support certain scholarships and so on. So it's just a great organization. I'm very pleased about that. Regarding my company, All West, we've recently moved. We were in South Seattle for our headquarters for 41 years. Seattle finally became unbearable with the homeless camps all around the neighborhood
everything
else. And the traffic problems, our people were having very, very bad traffic problems in Seattle. So we recently moved to Auburn, Washington, which is south, about 20 miles. It's nice. Our warehouse is more than double the size, so we have some walking around room now, and it's much more efficient. Our employees mostly live down south, so their commutes have gone from 45
easier.
Minutes to an hour down to about 15 minutes. So that's,
oh, that's
a huge
nice.
Benefit for our employees. And we're very happy. Our company's doing well, and the staff is very loyal. Most of my people have been with me for 20, 25, 30 years or more.
That's a good sign.
We're in a sweet spot, and I'm very, very blessed.
How many employees do you have?
I believe 27 now.
Oh, nice. Good. So out of those 27, how many of you guys are Seattle Seahawks fans?
26.
As people listen, know I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, so you guys came to the shores of Lake Erie and put a hurt on the Browns.
Wasn't that something? That Russell Wilson is something else. But, you know, everybody's a fan when they're winning. You know, ask me again a year from now. I'll tell you what the story is.
Yeah. But it was an exciting game, but not for, more misery for the Browns fans.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, brother.
Yeah. But we'll keep tuning in each week, see if it gets any better.
Yes, we will until they start losing. Then I'll watch something else.
Yeah, good. Well, thanks for joining us and for sharing the information on the Pac West and All West. I think Pac West has a fall conference coming up too, right?
That's correct, in Sonoma.
It's going to be
a very good one.
Good luck at that, and good luck in your new location.
Well, thank you very much, Mike, and it was nice talking to you.
Thanks for joining us on the Fastener News Report. That was Rick Peterson. He's the CEO of All West Components and Fasteners. He's also the immediate past president of the Pacific West Fastener Association, and he's a past president of STAFTA. The FDI number for September 2019 was 56.0 versus 55.9 the previous month. Visit FDISurvey.com to participate in the process and get a detailed PDF copy of Baird's monthly analysis. Now for today's top story. Worth Industry North America, also known as WINA, has acquired Fasco Fastener, a 40-year distributor of stainless steel, silicon bronze, and brass fasteners to the wholesale, OEM, and large retailer trade. The purchase will better serve the needs of WINA customers in the marine, solar, and general manufacturing markets. The acquisition complements WINA's strength in the marine market from Worth's marine fasteners operation, allowing for expanded services to customers across the USA, Mexico, Canada, and Brazil. Dan Hill, the CEO of Worth Industry North America, commented, quote, "Worth Industry has strong growth targets both organically and through key acquisitions. This investment represents another important strategic opportunity to offer better supply chain solutions and cost savings for manufacturers across North America," end quote. The Fasco brand name will live on as a division of Marine Fasteners. Next up, today's Fastener Newsmaker headlines. In acquisition, investment, and expansion news, the Agrati Group has completed its investment of $4 million worth of industrial fastener machinery and equipment in its Tiffin, Ohio facility. Wind Supply Incorporated has created a new company called Wind Supply Acquisitions Group to be led by Monty Salzman as president. And the AFF Group, a manufacturer of automotive fasteners, rivets, and special parts, has submitted a firm offer to Lisi Group for acquisition of the Lisi's automotive business that produces chassis screws, studs, and steering pivots. In personnel news, Wesco International has appointed Nelson Squires as its senior vice president and chief operating officer. The Hillman Group has announced that Doug Cahill, executive chairman, has taken on the duties of president and chief executive officer. On October 1st, 2019, Reinhold Wirth of the Wirth Group celebrated his 70th year work anniversary. In milestones, on October 6th, 2019, Hague Fasteners celebrated its 48th anniversary, and Zorro UK celebrated the sale of its 7 millionth fastener since it began selling them in 2017. You can get details on all of these stories and more in Fastener Technology International Magazine and the Fastener News Report newsletter, both available online at fastenertech.com. Finally, let's turn to the back page to talk about the USA market for fasteners. According to Industrial Fasteners, a new study from the Fredonia Group, the fastener market in the USA is mature but still growing at a rate of nearly 3% per year through the year 2023. Fredonia says that increases are due to modest pricing growth, rising durable goods manufacturing in the USA, and tapering competition from alternative joining technologies like adhesives and welding. Fredonia estimates the size of the USA industrial fasteners market to be currently $14.4 billion, increasing to around $16.7 billion in the next 5 years. This report includes forecasting for 2023 by product grade, physical design, and market, and it breaks out company market share. Complementing this stable and mature USA market for fasteners are the official numbers released from the International Fastener Expo, also known as the IFE in Las Vegas.
The USA's biggest fastener show last month attracted more than 5,000 professionals in the fastener machinery, tooling, and industrial-related industries. IFE 2019 noted an increase in exhibiting companies, particularly in the North American segment, with over 59 new exhibitors, bringing the total number to over 650 exhibitors. The inaugural IFE golf tournament drew more than 100 players on 26 teams. The 2.5-day conference included 12 sessions and 2 full-day workshops, and the opening reception reached full capacity with more than 900 fastener people in attendance. And finally, the fastener distribution sector looks healthy to me when I look at the top fastener distributors list recently published by Modern Distribution Management, also known as MDM. In alphabetical order, the top fastener distributors in the U.S. are Bisco Industries, Bassard America, Copper State Nut and Bolt, EFC International, Endries International, Fastenal, Granger, Hillman, Kimball Midwest, KLX Incorporated, Lawson Products, McMaster Car, MSC Industrial Supply, Optimus, Wesco Aircraft, and the Wirth Group. The American market is certainly a good one for focusing on fasteners. This has been Mike McNulty of Fastener Technology International, bringing you the Fastener News Report. Please send your news, pictures, comments, corrections, or complaints to me at McNulty@FastenerTech.com.
Rockstar Simi and Tim Roberto Jr. of Star Stainless continue their world tour of the fastener industry. That's just after Carmen Vertulo talks sheer strength on the Fastener Training Minute. Thanks for listening, everyone. It's Fully Threaded. Industries has been solving customers' toughest problems through innovative technologies, competitive pricing, and industry-leading service since 1955. A family-owned business, ND Industries manufactures and applies fastener locking, bonding, sealing, masking, and assembling products. Their pre-application process makes fasteners ready to use at the point of assembly, resulting in reduced labor costs, time savings, and superior quality assurance. As a fully integrated company, ND handles all aspects of operations from formulating custom chemical compounds and coating fasteners to providing inline inspection, packaging, and delivery services. ND Industry serves the global market with 13 divisions in the continental U.S. and also facilities in Taiwan, China, and Turkey. Learn more about ND Industries at our website at www.ndindustries.com. ND Industries. Innovative technologies, competitive pricing, and industry-leading service. Contact ND today.
First, there was fire. And man said,
fire, good.
Then there was the wheel. And man said,
wheel, good.
With the invention of the wheel came the need for fasteners. And man loudly exclaimed,
Buckeye, good.
Buckeye Fasteners, providing quality products since the dawn of man.
The preceding message was brought to you by Buckeye Fasteners and the Ohio Nut and Bolt Company, proud fastener show sponsors of Old Rusty Bolt Beer, official beer of the traveling salesman.
Tell them Grog sent you. Ugh.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Carmen Vertulo with the Fastener Training Minute, coming to you from the Fastener Training Institute and AIM Testing Laboratory in beautiful El Cajon, California. Today's topic is a very important property of fasteners called shear strength. Now, strangely enough, it's a very unusual property in that we very seldom actually test for shear strength of fasteners. It's important for engineers to know the shear strength. How can they find this out? How can you as a supplier help them know what the shear strength of a particular fastener is when it doesn't show up in any of the standards regarding those fasteners? When we come back, we'll tell you all there is to know about shear strength of fasteners.
Thanks, Carmen. This is Joe Morris with the Fastener Training Institute. Well, we've just returned from the International Fastener Expo in Vegas, and I thought the show was great this year. It was wonderful meeting many of you. Our booth was super busy, and it was great to hear that training is such a valuable component of your business success. The Fastener Training Institute has a lot to offer for the balance of this year. On October 15th, we will host Fastener Training Seminar at the Lab in Rancho Cucamonga, California. This is a certified fastener specialist class, and there is still time to register. Then on November 5th, we will host Fastener Basics in Costa Mesa, California. Now, I know everybody listening has at least one employee that they can send to this class, where students are going to learn about basic terminology, how to call out parts, common materials, nuts, sockets, and so, so much more. So whether you have a new hire or you're promoting someone from within, Fastener Basics is a must. Our final Fastener Training Week of 2019 will be in Los Angeles the week of December 2nd through the 6th. First of all, what better place to be in cold December than sunny California? This class is intended for fastener distributors, manufacturers, and end users. Students will learn manufacturing processes, consensus standards, quality control, and much, much more. For webinars, we still have your training needs covered. Our November webinar is compliance for the fastener supplier. We're going to discuss RoHS, REACH, DFAR, Prop 65, even the Fastener Quality Act. It's going to be a great, great webinar, but you know what? If you can't make it, remember, we record all of our webinars, and you can access them anytime you want through our online learning library. Just visit our website at www.fastenertraining.com to see our entire schedule and view our recorded webinar series. Now back to Carmen for our Fastener Training Minute.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is Carmen Vertullo with the Fastener Training Minute, coming to you from the Fastener Training Institute and AIM Testing Laboratory, continuing to speak to you about a property of fasteners, actually a property of all materials, called shear strength. One of the mysteries about shear strength when it comes to fasteners is very few fasteners are actually tested for shear strength in the commercial world. That is, our ASTM and our SAE and our ISO standard fasteners are typically tested for a strength property called tensile strength. That means if we pull them apart in the long ways direction, how much stress can they handle before they break? Shear strength, as you can imagine, just the way it sounds, is the strength property of the fastener when we try to cut it, like if we were cutting a wire or cutting them with a pair of scissors, shear through the fastener. Now, fasteners aren't rated for shear strength, but engineers often want to know what the shear strength of a fastener is. Certain other types of fasteners, typically non-threaded fasteners such as pins and rivets, are actually tested for this property, and some aerospace fasteners are tested for shear strength. So in our commercial world, if we wanted to know the shear strength of a fastener, obviously we could just test it to find out. But if we wanted to make a good estimate, we can assume that the shear strength of a fastener through the threads, which is going to be the weakest point, is going to be at least 50% of the tensile strength. So, for example, a half-inch grade 8 bolt has a tensile strength of about 20,600 pounds. So its shear strength through the threads in single shear, that's one shear plane, would be about half that, or a little bit over 10,000 pounds. Now, oftentimes when we test shear strength, we test double shear. That means we put the fastener in a very tricky fixture, and it actually gets loaded in two planes in the shear direction. We want to know the shear strength of the material. We would divide that by two. If you really want to have a good resource for helping your customers understand shear strength of their fasteners, the Industrial Fasteners Institute's IFI Technology Connection in the printout that comes with their fastener analysis feature includes shear strength. It's based on the formula that I just told you, half of the tensile strength of the fastener through the threads. Now, oftentimes, fasteners are loaded in shear, not through the threads, but through the body. This is the preferred way to load the fastener. So what would the strength through the body be? Well, the IFI Technology Connection printout gives you the shear strength through the body of the fastener and through the threads, assuming it's not a fully threaded fastener. That's really about all there is to know about shear strength of fasteners. It's not that mysterious, and it's really easy to get a straightforward answer, even though it may not be in the fastener specification. Well, this has been Carmen Vertula with your Fastener Training Minute. Thank you for listening.
This is Leo Kaur, editor of Distributors Link magazine, and you're listening to Fully Threaded Radio.
Fully Threaded listeners who've been in the fastener industry for a while might have had the privilege of attending a Fastener Association meeting during which the great Bruce Darling of Porteous Fastener Company presented one of his unique dissertations on the state of the industry. Porteous, of course, for those of you newer to the industry, was a powerhouse importer and a major player in the business, eventually merging with Bright & Best several years ago. But when Bruce spoke, you got the kind of insight into the business that you didn't find pretty much anywhere else. He knew all the players on both sides of the ocean and the supply chain all the way back to the iron mines, if you could believe that. His presentations were truly something to behold. So in that vein, we're very fortunate today to be joined by two highly respected and extremely knowledgeable individuals who are on something of a North American tour of fastener associations to carry on the tradition Bruce began. And it's only fitting that headlining this North American tour, we have a rock star of the industry. That's Simi of Stelfast, along with her opening act of the great Star Stainless Screw. It's Tim Roberto. And they're joining us from Baltimore as we record this. Hi, guys.
Hi, Eric.
Hey, Eric.
Was that a pretty accurate preamble? I mean, you're at the Mid-Atlantic Fastener Association tonight, and you're going to be presenting your dissertation? Is that what we're calling it?
It was called What's New, What's Next, a Fastener Industry Update. And so we look at different aspects of the fastener world and how that affects both us and our customers and everybody included in that supply chain. Yes.
And where have you presented this so far? I know you were out at the PAC West already, right?
Correct. Yeah. Down in LA, we've presented. Today we present in Baltimore, and then November we present in Florida.
Very cool. Well, welcome to the podcast, Tim. I know we have not spoken to you, at least online, before, but Simi, welcome back.
Thanks, Eric.
Been a while.
It has been.
Now, I've been warned ahead of time to avoid Brady Bunch trivia, but the good news is I think we're going to have so much content to deal with today, that's not going to be a problem.
We're ready for the Fastener Talk and the Brady Bunch. Don't you worry.
Yeah, bring it on, Eric.
Wow, Tim too. Okay, well, maybe that's a challenge. I'll have to think of something up. Hey, I wanted to dive right into the meat and potatoes of it because there's so much out there and we really want to inform, educate, and maybe entertain a little bit too. Let's start with the Fastener Distributor Index. I know both of you have had a chance to glance at the September numbers and overall, of course, at 56, it's a pretty strong number, but what we're seeing is the forward-looking indicator dropping off just a little bit, actually more than a little bit. How do you interpret that?
Well, we're looking at the last quarter of the year, Eric, which typically drops off just in reality for our brands, at least. You're looking at, you know, October, November, December, you've got holidays, shutdowns, all of that. Now, on top of that, I think you have some economic factor and some slowdowns in the economy that are really going to be short-lived just for this back half of the year. So not really surprising from what we're seeing that it's going to be a little slow for the next couple months, but indicators are looking good into 2020 and that's what we're looking forward to.
Yeah, I think it's has a lot to do with confidence and there's some anxiousness as far as uncertainty. For us, like Simi said, there was an expectation that the end of 19 would slow down a bit and into maybe the first quarter in 2020 and then pick right back up. And so we're looking forward to that continuation, maybe a stronger rebound, but we'll see what it brings us.
Do either of you have a feel for why the difference, though, between what we're actually experiencing at 56 and the 44? I mean, why is it so different?
So I'm going to tell you from our perspective, you know, we have one industry that we service into that we're seeing a definite decline in the last quarter, and that's heavy duty truck. And that does bring down several other industries when they start to slow down. So heavy duty truck has had a great year this year. The back end, this last quarter, is when they're starting to slow down. We expect them to stay constant going into 2020, but we know that this back half of our back quarter of 2019, maybe first quarter of 2020 will be slower for them. So that's definitely something in our perspective that's bringing down what people are seeing as going forward. For anyone who's in that industry, you're getting forecasts coming in where, you know, they're pushing out some orders, they're changing some quantities, and you're wondering what's coming next. We're expecting, you know, at least three quarters of 2020 to be stable for that heavy duty truck area, but this one quarter is definitely going to bring it down a bit.
And I do think there's regional effects to this. We see the national level, and so we see the different regions and how they're affected. And we see some regions that seem to be a little more affected. Northern California, some of your high-tech areas seem to be a little more affected than other areas as far as what we see.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Let me ask you this. Do you ever see a correlation between the PMI, the Purchase Managers Index, and your businesses?
We'll see a little bit of it, but really, I honestly, what it ultimately comes down to for us and what we end up looking at is the indexes are good leading indicators, but at the same time, when it's all said and done, what we see is customer need, and a lot of it's driven by that. And as much as we see like a PMI that might slow down, for us, we might see inventories that are starting to lean out or people who are allowing their inventories to bleed out a little bit more than they normally would. So while the indicators and indexes are good, I think sometimes for us, we also have to look at what the local need is.
So I'd agree where the PMI is definitely an interesting indicator, but it doesn't necessarily trend to where we're going to. There may be some similarities, but as Tim mentioned, you know, as master importers, we're driven a fair amount by what our customers happen to have on the floor. There are certain needs, there's different maintenance things that pop up. Those types of things can skew just following the PMI as an indicator for a master importer.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Or if nothing else, a delay built in. But we're always watching that number and trying to make sense of how it relates to the FDI. I don't think that there's really a wide agreement yet. And so that's why I asked the question.
Well, I think you also have to realize, Eric, that a lot of the factors that you look at, and it's really great information to see the trending, has a more direct impact on the distributor base. And both Star and then the Lindstrom and the Stahlfast brands are focused solely on supporting that distributor base. So the distributor base may see a more direct correlation to the numbers that you gather and that you present, whereas master importers, we're really here to service those distributors to help them with their turns, to make sure they have just-in-time inventory, all those types of things. So our results might be slightly different than how they see their correlation to the numbers that you have.
Okay, that's a great point. And I think a lot of people in the audience, maybe who aren't as familiar with your names, should be reminded that you, Tim, and Simi are both representatives at the highest levels of master importers who service the industry. So that is the perspective that we're hearing, and it's quite valuable for many in the Fully Threaded audience. So with that, let's get on to what you're out there sharing with the industry through the associations. And Simi, you'd mentioned to me earlier that a little bit of what you're doing is trying to drive home the idea that there's great value in participating in associations for exactly the type of presentation that you're delivering.
Yeah, so I give a lot of credit to the people who volunteer their time into these associations and having things organized and presentations for their membership so they can gain information. You know, Tim mentioned earlier on when he was talking about sort of what we're seeing in marketplace about the fact that, you know, Star Stainless looks at things from a national standpoint. They have accounts all across North America. What the associations do a great job of is bringing in team members who may have exposure beyond just the local association so that we can talk about what we're seeing across the country, you know, across the continent, and then again into overseas and what we're seeing with Asia, with Europe, with different places where maybe this product is coming in from. So I think that the associations have really worked hard, and I give them a lot of credit where, you know, whether it be Tim and myself or other team members who they invite out to talk about what we're seeing so that they can make sure that their members are getting a global view on what's going on so they can make the best decisions for their business.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think what it comes down to today is we look at that need for information and where are we getting that information from? How is this, where are we getting the inputs from? And really what it comes down to is you're looking for those best practices for our own business at a micro level, but we're also looking at a macro level. What almost a benefit that is to be able to tap into that resource that you would have to pay big dollars for consultation and all this other stuff. So you come to an association, you can listen to, and I actually enjoy listening to Simi and her perspective because I don't always tap into the steel side of things. And to me, I think that even helps us on the STAR side when we look at the complete picture of what the fastener industry is going through.
I also think it's great for the distributors to understand that, you know, Tim and I can stand up there together and have a conversation and educate them in a collaborative manner. As master importers, our goal is for our distributors to really succeed, which means that we don't go up there and pitch for each other's business. We don't go up there and just promote what we do. We go up there to collaborate together to make our customers successful as a whole. Because the more our customers succeed as a whole, you know, the more it supports us and what we're trying to do in our companies as well.
See how well she says that? That's why I'm the opening act.
Yeah, she's good, Tim.
I have to put it on mute every time you make me laugh.
Well, those are great comments, you guys. And yeah, I have to say, as the newcomer among us to the industry, I've always found it really, it's very admirable about the industry that we can all get in a room together as competitors, but friendly competitors, share information, and then get back out there into the market. So with that, Tim Roberto, you are an extremely knowledgeable person when it comes to, among other things, the stainless market. What are you going to share with the Mid-Atlantic fastener distributor when you get on stage this evening?
So a lot of what we focus in on is the metal markets itself, especially with nickel, since that's really your big driver for stainless. A lot of people look at it and they say, well, that's like 8 to 12 to 14% of the fastener, but it really can make up anywhere from 30 to 40% of the cost of the fastener. And so we look a lot at the nickel market and to see what that's driving and the different effects that cause or the different effects that allow that to be. And so when we look at the nickel market, historically, there was a linear graph that when the nickel market moved, usually your stainless prices would move. And so people got kind of used to that. Well, in the last 4 years, nickel's really been soft. Your markets have been soft. The pricing has been soft. And so kind of what I share is when we look at the 20-year average of nickel, it's been about 681. But when you look at the last 4 years, you're talking about an average of 508. And so you're talking about a stiff reduction in price, almost 25% reduction over the last 4 years. And so we've gotten used to cheap nickel in the last 4 years, but we've forgotten she can be volatile at times and she can move and different inputs can cause that to happen. And we've seen that there's been ups and downs with the supply. There's, of course, always the ups and downs of demand, but demand has stayed pretty steady. But what we're seeing recently with this pricing, the effects of the pricing are a lot to do with the supply side. And what we're going to talk about tonight is Indonesia. And it's funny, when we talk about Asian countries that are affecting stainless prices, probably one of the last countries people would pick would be Indonesia. You know, look at your China or India. Everybody looks at your big countries and we think they have effect, but Indonesia is the biggest producer of nickel themselves. And Indonesia, they go through their ups and downs with nickel. They in 2014, they banned nickel exports for a good 3 years. And when that happened, we saw that they took out 75% of their world market production. And what it did is it caused nickel to go up. And we saw that in 2014. We saw that in 2015.
Why did they do that, Tim?
At that time, they were doing it to really try and control the cost. They're talking about bringing it back again today. And so it's going to begin January 1st, 2020, but for a different reason. Now, Indonesia's kind of wised up. And so what they're doing right now is they're also trying to control the supply chain because they're basically been used only for the natural resource. That people are coming in, especially China. It's huge for Indonesia that they're tapping into the natural resource and then just taking the nickel with them. What Indonesia wants to do now is they want to set up a second part of that supply chain. And so they're forcing them to then smelt also in Indonesia. And so now they're currently set up to bring in more smelters. I think they want to bring in a total of 25 and they've already brought in 11. They want to get up to date so that not only are they going to mine the nickel, but they're also going to smelt it. And so they're going to ban the export of the raw nickel so that they can also smelt it right there in Indonesia.
So last time that they stopped the exportation, what impact did it have on the pricing? Because we're seeing a lot of fluctuation now, and I'm wondering if it's if we're seeing the same thing or if this maneuver about bringing the smelting onshore has succeeded for them.
You're seeing the exact same effect, that it gradually started to rise because of the slow in the supply. And so they slowed off in the supply, and it caused it to go up. And so what you're seeing is that same sentiment that's coming back now is you're slowly starting to see it rise again. And at that time, it got to around $10 a pound, where right now we're at 806, I think, as it closed yesterday. But that was coming back from 478, which we began the year. So we started the year at 478 a pound for nickel. As of yesterday, we're at 806. That's over 60% increase, which in your normal time would be a 20% increase in price. But you're seeing right now that factories are hungry. The screw manufacturers are hungry. So we haven't seen the full effect of that increase of price yet.
So, Tim, I'm going to ask a question. I'm curious to know. So you talked about how Indonesia is going to ban the export of nickel unless it can actually process it first. And I find that statement so interesting, and it's something I like to talk about with other people within the industry, because in the United States and in Canada, we have much more of a sort of openness in how certain business practices are done. So with nickel in Indonesia, is it government controlled? Is it just the way that they're going to sort of run the tariffs and the taxes through it? How are they controlling this?
It wasn't always government controlled, but you'll have government controls that will come in and change industries. And that's exactly what you're seeing. That's what you saw in 2014 and you're seeing still today, that there is some government controls as far as, especially when it comes to exports, because they want to continue to control their own economy, to continue to grow that economy. And that's exactly what their focus has been is, okay, well, how are we growing this economy? Well, if they add another level to the supply chain, well, that grows their economy organically. They force the issue, but organically, they're forcing growth in the economy because you're creating jobs, you're creating investment and money. So not only are they setting up the smelters, you're having other foreign companies who are coming in, and they're also setting up the smelting. So you're just having an influx of investment in Indonesia.
Yeah, and I find that fascinating because even back in the time, so from the steel product standpoint, when, you know, importing material from China and the government of China decided that they wanted to do an environmental cleanup, and they literally picked up an entire area of plating factories and said, you have to move. What's really interesting as we deal with this global economy is different political regimes, different beliefs within countries create different effects. And it's amazing, I always find in certain countries, how much the government can have an immediate impact on the costing of the product that we have to bring in by the decisions that they make.
Yeah, excellent point. Because we saw it also a year ago with the Philippines, who did the same thing. They saw nickel mining as a very dirty process. And so they literally closed down mines for environmental concerns. And so you'll see geopolitical issues throughout the world that continue to play a factor.
Hey, maybe somebody should cancel the law of unintended consequences. That'd be great. Tim, could you give us, for the benefit of some of the distributors out there that are operating at a different level in the supply chain, an idea of how all of this has been affecting and might affect the cost of finished goods for them?
Yeah, good question. Really, what we've seen so far up to this point from maybe July until today, we've seen probably about a 10% to 12% increase. And that changes with material. So your hex heads and nuts are very material driven, as opposed to like your screws or your shoemail screws, your machine screws aren't as much material driven as those. And so really it's about the material driven prices. And we've seen probably anywhere from 10 to 12%.
Okay, that's very interesting. Now, is that the crux of what you're going to be presenting tonight, or is there some other topic area that you want to tee off on?
No, that really is the crux. It's for us at Star, it really is this idea of stainless has been a lull for a while. If you go back to the good old days of 07, which I'll try to move on from, but when we were looking at like $23 a pound, $24 a pound, we saw constantly the streak volatility. And so in the commoditization of nickel, we've seen it kind of level out a little bit more, but I think we've taken it for granted that it's kind of been at a lull until we get used to this fact that, oh yeah, next year we're going to be able to knock off another percentage of price because it's been constant throughout. Well, what we're trying to remind people is be careful of the markets that we cover because it goes up and down. Prices are volatile. Prices change. And so we're seeing a little bit of that. We're also seeing some other insights that are coming in that may affect stainless, such as your lithium ion batteries that will look to the higher end of nickel, but still will cause an effect in the nickel prices. And so we're seeing people that are predicting that, well, nickel's going to get back to $17 a pound because of this influx of what's coming on. And so what we're trying to let people know is be careful, monitor these things. This goes back to like Timmy was saying, is these are the conversations we want to have so that our customers are armed with the information that they need to really watch your indicators in nickel to see where that's going, to be able to make those decisions appropriately. And if not, to pick up a phone and call your supplier to have that conversation is always important.
Do you find that most of your customers are aware of that, or is this kind of startling news to some people, do you think?
You know what? It's a good question. It's a mixed bag. So we see both. We see some people who are already on it because they pay attention all the time, because also they do some of their own importing. And so they've seen it. But then you have others who, like, they really do rely on their suppliers to help them to know what's going on. And because we haven't necessarily seen the price increases on the finished goods yet, there's a sense of, well, everything's fine in the stainless world. Well, that could change very quickly.
So, and that's a great point, Eric, timing. You know, Tim and I'll talk at different associations about pricing of metals or pricing of import, you know, that whole sort of demand supply. It's timing. So when Star is buying product overseas, they're buying product overseas, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, but product that's going to come in 90 days. So the timing of what they're seeing from pricing today, you know, their customers aren't seeing if there's a decrease. If there's an increase, they're trying to figure out as much as they can as to what is it is that they need to do to make sure that the pricing matches the timing.
You're absolutely right, except that I wish we could get our product in 90 days. But yes, you're absolutely right, Tamia. It really is about timing. And so for us, that's where we're getting those indicators way before, because we really try to buy out ahead of time so that, again, it comes back to inventory management, so that we have it on the shelf. It's there for the customer, but we also have a good indicator where that's going to be going. And so it really is getting that information into the hands of the people who need to make the decisions at their level, our distributors who are looking at those long-term contracts and the things that are coming up so that they can make the best decisions for their company.
And Eric, you've been asking sort of what it is that we're going to talk about in Baltimore and what have we talked about at the PacWest Association meetings that we've done years past. The one thing I think that Tim and I have always gone back to is that concept of communication and relationship. What we say tonight is a moment in time, especially on the steel side of the industry where we've got a fair amount of product coming out of China. You know, at this moment, we are set for tariffs to increase October 15th. Who knows what happens? But what Tim and I both really promote is you don't have to be a foundation customer of our brands for you to pick up the phone and ask our opinion on what's going on and how we see things overseas. That communication from the master importers to distributor base is just critical, because what we see happening overseas and in the product that we're buying today has an impact on our distributors, you know, in the near future. And we're happy to share that information whenever anyone wants to call.
Well, thanks for pointing that out, Simi. It's a very good point. And just for the benefit of people who may not know how to go about doing that, how would both of you advise contacting your respective organizations to do that?
At this point, can I give out Tim's cell number? If needed, call Tim at...
I think it comes back to your point person at your location, that each purchasing person, even the salesperson from the distributor, is speaking to a point person at the supplier. And it really is just having that conversation. It's also our salespeople. And that really is a training on our part as master distributor, is getting our salespeople abreast of the situation so that they can then also communicate that to our customers, so that it really is that back and forth. And that, to me, is absolutely right, that it's critical for that relationship. That relationship is what builds everything.
And I'm going to do the association plug here. And for the listeners, they should know I'm not on any boards, nor do I have any actual sort of management involvement in the associations, but come out to the association meetings. I can almost guarantee you, you're going to meet one of our team members at that association meeting. And if you've got questions, ask them. If they don't have specific answers, they'll get them for you. And these are the associations that are putting on the talks that we can share this information.
Yeah, Simi is absolutely right. I've seen it myself. When I first started managing a branch at Star, I was 25 years old. I can't believe I was doing the math. I was 25 years old. But I do remember going to the PacWest meetings. And I remember being surrounded by these giants of the industry. You talked about Bruce Jarling. You see all these other people that are around you that really want to help you succeed in this industry, because they want the industry to succeed. Because when it does, so too do they. And it was really nice to be able to tap into that information, to the knowledge. Where else were you going to get that from? What a great gift that is to be able to go to a place to tap into thousands of years of experience in the fastener industry. And to me, it was invaluable.
And just for the record, Don Haggerty looks like he might not be all that approachable, but he's always talked to me. So don't be afraid.
He will be in Baltimore tonight for anybody who wants to talk to him.
So. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be down in Naples, too. So you never know. He might break out the Speedo.
Yeah, so Tim and I, for anybody who's listening, let's not go through the Speedo conversation. We're going to pass that one. But for anyone who's listening, Tim not in a Speedo, will be down at the Naples meeting for the NFDA, going through this information as well, based on what's happening in that current economy at that time. And so I can tell you from the steel perspective coming out of China, and that could be completely different than what I'm talking about tonight.
Good point. And Simi, for the right purchase order, I will not be in a Speedo for the rest of the distributors who will be there. So with the right purchase order, I will stay away from the Speedo. So thank you.
Ooh.
I might actually have to that purchase order, too.
Yeah, I think we got a challenge here. The Tim Roberto Speedo Challenge. Well, we'll have to work on that one.
If you tie college tuition to it, he might do it.
Thank you, Simi. Exactly. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, on a possibly slightly less exciting note, Tim, you mentioned something a couple of minutes ago I wanted to circle back to, and it really touched on material availability. And Simi, I know that your portion of the talk tonight is going to deal a lot with that. There's a lot of components to that. What are a couple of the things you're looking at when it comes to material availability some of our listeners might be concerned about or thinking about?
So material availability with regards to what's on the floor here and being able to support our distributor base, there are several factors that go into it. So when you're taking a look at how you set up the structure, it's everything from the right supplier, the right price, the right quality, so you can actually load the product, and then the right logistics time in. And all of those factors have different things that are going on today. The sole base of the master importer is to drive that immediate inventory to our distributor base. As we look at sort of the back end of 2019 with some sort of uncertainty as to what people are expecting going forward, and the hopeful 2020 that maybe not everybody's willing to jump on board with just yet, being that master importer to have that product becomes even more important so that our customers can access it when they need it without having to forecast 6 and 9 months out. And I think that material availability from the steel standpoint has become a little bit more challenging in just making sure that it's the right product from the right factory at the right time. And I'm happy to sort of break that down however you want. But with the changes going on in the global economy, with the tariffs coming out, and how product may be funneling from different countries and different suppliers, you do have to really manage that supply chain extremely well to make sure you've got the product when you need it.
Well, I think that's what a lot of people are wondering, because frankly, I don't think a lot of people see that part of the business the way you do. Is the supply chain actually refunneling as a result of tariffs?
So the supply chain is refunneling where necessary. I will always advocate for the fact that there are certain low quality, low engineered parts that will never move out of China. You know, so in our industry, it's the USS SAE flat washers. They're made out of scrap steel. They're very basic to make. The fact that those would ever move out of China, even with tariffs on it, I would be surprised. But there are definitely other products that are starting to funnel to other countries. And what becomes challenging as they funnel to other countries is the fact that you've got maybe a new factory, maybe a factory that's in existence but has never provided this volume before, maybe a factory that's been in existence that's tooling up to do different products that they haven't done before. And that completely changes how you manage your supply chain. And it puts an even more importance on monitoring the quality at the factory site before you're loading it to bring it in. Because we do have suppliers today who are very reputable, very good at what they do, but we've really had to go in and audit them and make sure they can actually handle the capacity of the business that they're bringing on as business is shifting out of China.
Okay, so actually, in your description there, it sounds like there are more influences at foot here than simply the tariffs.
So the tariff is a cost influence that then determines whether or not you have to take a look at different countries of origins for the products that we've been importing. Some of those country of origins shift from China to Taiwan, which is a simple shift. Taiwan's been making these parts for decades. The factories are very well established. They know what they're doing. Some other products, as you have different manufacturers are trying to set up in different countries, are now coming out of Thailand. They're coming out of Malaysia. They're coming out of Vietnam. You know, they're coming out of Korea. Depending on which country you're dealing with, you know, is there a stable steel supplier? Are they used to acquiring their steel locally? Have they made these products before and have they handled this volume before? So the decision maker in shifting it out of China, yes, the tariff has shifted some products out of China. But the decision as to where it's shifted it to isn't just a price decision. It has to be the full package. There's no point in bringing in cost competitive parts or a lower cost part that the customer is going to have either delivery quality issues with. It just doesn't make any sense. It's the full package, and that's what you've got to watch.
Which is interesting. For us, we don't do as much from China itself. But have you seen problems with capacities from the other countries because of this?
We have seen, not problems yet, because obviously it's... So having worked in the import business myself personally for more years than I'd ever tell anyone, and as at least the Stelfast brand 40 plus years, we've spent a lot of time figuring out how to qualify the factories, even from a capacity standpoint. There are definitely factories out there, though, that we turned away because we took a look at them. We knew they could do a price competitive part, but they've never handled the volume before, and they just brought on business from four other people. And we looked at it and said, oh, those four people are going to be late in getting their product and potentially not the right quality. You can't handle the capacity. So it's shifted the responsibility on the importer to spend more time qualifying that supplier, because a lot of our Chinese-based suppliers that we dealt with have been doing this for decades. They're very good at what they do. Their quality is up to what we need it to be. They're used to our inspection team. All that was already systemized, and now we're shifting it to another country. So there's been a lot of different things that we've had to weigh in when determining whether or not that new factory was the right factory.
That's a great approach. We always saw it as a challenge to try and tie up as much capacity as we could. It's kind of fun.
And that does really work. And it works really well for even with the Chinese suppliers than Taiwanese suppliers, still going in and tying up their capacity, because then, you know, they're more committed to what you're doing. They're more of a partner in how you're selling your product. But for some of these factories, Tim, we looked at factories who were taking on orders that were close to double their capacity and they hadn't quite figured out how they were doing it yet. You know, I've seen factories that have taken on products for fairly simple parts, but they've never made them before. Can they really make them? Those types of things, it's not current capacity. It's factories who are taking on products beyond what their typical business day has looked like for the past 24 months.
Well, thanks for that, Simi. That is exactly the kind of insight that folks will be hearing a lot more of this evening at the Mid-Atlantic Fastener Distributors Association. And I think we're going to leave it at that as an enticement for people to get out there, as you said earlier, to the association so they can get more of this kind of content, establish more of the relationships that'll improve their businesses. Tim, thanks to you also for your insights. I mean, this is just fantastic information we're sharing with the audience.
Yeah, I think the key to all of this, honestly, Eric, is the relationships. The industry's changed, technology is involved in everything that we do, but at the end of the day, as much as technology gives us access to information, it almost gives us access to too much information. And the relationships become even more important. So whether it be coming out to the associations to see who they happen to have speaking to help share information with them, or picking up the phone and calling someone who you know in the industry to get information, I just think it's so critical that we keep talking to each other and educating each other. So, you know, Tim and I have knowledge with regards to what we see from across North America and our distributor-based customers, as well as what we're importing from Asia, but we don't have any information on what our distributors are seeing. So we're just as dependent on our distributors to feed that information back to us so that we can plan better to support them.
See, this is why I like listening to her, because she says it way better than I would have. That was perfectly said. Thank you, Simi.
You need to stop that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like the big fastener industry group hug is what we need, is what you're saying, Simi.
Exactly.
It's just, it's understanding that technology doesn't take away from the value of hearing information from someone you trust. It just doesn't.
I think that's a recurrent theme. And there was also something that I think I picked up from this conversation that I didn't know, and that is that the two of you have been doing these presentations for a couple of years. I was under the impression it was a little bit more recent, but it's been a little while, and you've gotten to know each other a little bit, haven't you?
Yes, we have.
I think, what are we on, year four?
Yeah, year four. I believe so. Yeah, year four.
And you know, again, so Star and Stelfast, now Lindstrom Brand, don't really interact with each other on a day-to-day business standpoint, but we've learned so much from working with each other through these presentations that, you know, it's been a lot of fun. I've really, really enjoyed doing these presentations with Tim.
I completely agree.
Who's handling
also, Well, wait a second. I've also learned how important college tuition is in the U.S.
Thank you, Simi.
As a result of the presentations.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I'm sensing an inside joke there.
At the end of Tim's presentations, he normally tries to advocate for buy more stainless because he needs money to send his kids to school. but now we're at the point where we're starting to share some of this information, whether it be us or other people in our teams, to different associations. So I'm now actually petitioning for a tour bus.
Oh, I love it.
So that's the next thing we're going to need.
I love it.
Yeah. Now who's going to handle pyrotechnics on this traveling show?
Neither of us.
No, you're right.
That is a huge safety issue.
Agreed.
Yeah, well, that's the point. But there's another reason, Tim, that everybody should be attending the associations, because most of them, or many of them, put it that way, have really excellent scholarship programs.
There you go, Tim. Scholarship.
I love it.
You're a West Coast guy, but the MWFA, among others, is a place for you to stop. Well, I have, speaking of pyrotechnics fireworks, one final question for you before you guys hit the stage out there in Baltimore. And that relates to something that probably directly you're not being affected by, but many of your customers might be. I'm wondering, are you seeing any indirect effects of Amazon out there in the industrial distribution marketplace? Simi, what are you seeing out there? What are you hearing?
So I guess what I would say is that I have heard Amazon in the marketplace for many years now, and never completely been sure as to the role that they really play and how much business that they're actually taking on. What we hear today isn't necessarily customers losing business as a result of Amazon. In our pocket of supplying the distributors, and our distributors are very industrial in what they do, what we hear are some smaller distributors who use Amazon as their e-commerce front to what they do.
Sure.
So it's part of their way of go-to-market. So yep. Where in the beginning, I think there was a lot of conversations and concern as to whether or not Amazon would take away from the small, medium customer base that we really specialize in. We really haven't heard a lot of that. And we're not seeing business erode as a result of that. So far, we've seen it pair with some of our distributors to give them more exposure to the marketplace. But that doesn't mean that tomorrow it's not going to have an impact going forward. You know, there's more and more of Amazon popping up in our day-to-day life beyond just looking at it on a computer screen. So we sort of have to constantly monitor it and get information back from our distributor base as to how it's affecting them, because it's our goal to come up with creative solutions to help them stay competitive through any competition that they may face.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And we haven't even seen the self-driving semis all over the highway yet. Tim, what are you thinking?
I concur with Simi, is that we've heard it for a long time, but I haven't heard any direct loss of market, loss of customers because of Amazon. One of the things that I and this is what I truly believe, and I think part of like what Simi had talked about and what I truly believe is it comes down to that relationship is one of the aspects of the fastener industry that you will never really fully be able to take away is the technical aspect of it. For stainless, it's there. But for steel, it's definitely there. When you're talking about structural and all this other stuff, and you had the technical expertise of people who've been selling this for 20 years, that you can have that conversation and pick up a phone and say, because I've heard it so many times, so many different ways, that it was you got a call from a customer who was really trying to buy the wrong thing, and you were helping him out to get him out of a what would have been a bad situation. And I think one of the great things that we will always have is we have those people who will be able to do business with. Because when it comes down to it, and I really believe this is the statement that it ultimately dictates who we are as an industry, it's people dealing with people. And I think one of the gifts that we have is that expertise and that experience to be able to help our customers through that, to be able to guide them in the decisions that they need to make in their buying habits and things we do. I think one of the areas that it will affect us is the way that people want to buy. There's an expectation of you click in and it comes to you in 2 days and it's on your dock. And I think that has changed a little bit, but I don't see it as much of taking away from our industry yet at this point.
Yeah. Market expectations are changing along with everything else as a result of the online experience. That's for sure. Can you imagine being on the Amazon return desk though? I mean, just in general, not just when it comes to industrial, it's got to be a hair-raising experience.
You're not kidding.
Yeah, I think what Tim said was really important in the fact that the fastener, whether it's stainless, whether it's steel, is generally a smaller price component into what's going into the full application. But our product has specifications and requirements and expectations that it has to meet. You know, I do agree in the fact that the more that things become I'm buying a SKU number and less the I'm understanding what I'm buying, we run risks in our industry. Our product is engineered in for a reason. It's not just some random SKU that you put into whatever it is that you're doing.
That's a great point. Really what you do is you open yourself up to some true dangers when you don't understand the product and what its function is.
As expected, some excellent insights there. Thank you both very much. Tim Roberto, you are the president of Star Stainless Screw. Simi, of course, you are a rock star in the fastener industry, both in Baltimore today, and you're going to be doing your best on stage to educate that association, as you always do, every association you attend. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
And Tim will probably most likely edit out that whole Speedo part.
Come on. Really? I was hoping you could do like one of those pictures when you send out the new, you know, podcast. Is that like,
yeah, there'll be a teaser.
And like a little Speedo.
Do you really want to see this? If not, you better place a big purchase order. I like that.
I bet you more people will click on that than we ever see.
All right, well, I'll get with the graphics department. And Jamie, I hope she's listening right now. Hey, everybody, thanks again. And we'll be back. It's Fully Threaded Radio. Need fasteners? Fully Threaded Radio listeners know that Stealthfast offers over 12,000 fastener items direct from stock, including bolts, cap screws, nuts, screws, and washers in a variety of finishes. Per print, specials, and standards, Stealthfast has been a global sourcing leader since 1972. As an ISO-certified supplier with facilities across North America and Asia, each member of the Stealthfast team is dedicated to supporting fastener distributors with the highest quality products and service possible. That's why the motto remains, for service you deserve and people you trust, it's Stealthfast.
Since 1905, Buckeye Fasteners and the Ohio Nut and Bolt Company have been supplying the world with high-quality fasteners.
Our standard product lines include weld fasteners, graded weld screws, leg levelers, self-clinching hardware, clevis pins, rivet nuts, and various other fastener lines, allowing us to support virtually all types of industries. We have complete custom manufacturing capabilities in low carbon, medium carbon, and stainless steel materials, and our quality systems are registered to ISO standards. Our on-staff engineering department can assist you with product development and provide total technical support. Our knowledgeable sales team members offer superior customer service and are here to answer any questions you may have regarding our products. Having a hard time finding a part? Let our sourcing specialist do the work for you to locate those items. We offer competitive pricing with typically smaller minimums and shorter lead times. To find out more about Buckeye Fasteners, please call us at 800-437-1689 or on the web at buckeyefasteners.com. Buckeye Fasteners, more than just weld.
Parker Fasteners is your premier cold heading manufacturer, forging the future with precision and quality as our top priority. When you think of domestically produced sockets and tamper-proof screws from alloy and stainless, including A286, think Parker Fasteners. Our lockout line of security fasteners feature high torque, oval center pin design, and unique lobes that provide one-of-a-kind security for your customers. Our in-house 3D printing capability makes the prototyping process fast and affordable, and we're ready to produce your large or small run orders with highly competitive pricing and unbeatable lead times. So, forge the future with Parker Fasteners. Visit Parker Fasteners online today at parkerfasteners.com.
This is Frank DeVito from Solution Industries, and you're listening to Fully Threaded Radio.
Well, I think she's onto something there, Bri. I mean, Simi's idea of what I called a fastener industry group hug makes a lot of sense to me. We all need to communicate more, don't you think?
Yes, possibly. I'm not sure whether the group hug, all of us wearing Speedos, is quite the idea I would have had in mind, though.
Yeah, I think it was strongly implied that the Speedos would not be included in that.
Okay. A bit like a whole lot of Aussie lifeguards, but still.
Yeah, there's a vision.
Oh, no.
The fastener industry meets Baywatch.
Well, Long Beach isn't that far away.
The main point being, Simi and Tim are doing a great service to the industry. And at the top of that segment, I mentioned way back, at least as far as my involvement with the fastener industry, Bruce Darling used to give similar presentations, and it was extremely useful. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot, and I'm sure that attendees of these association meetings will be picking up quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like to thank both Rockstar Simi of Stelfast and Tim Roberto of Star Stainless for recreating part of what they've been putting on during this Fastener National Tour. Or as you so appropriately termed it, Bri, the Screwsapalooza.
Screwsapalooza, yeah. See, that comes from Chicago, sort of. Okay, they have their Lollapalooza here.
Yeah, I got the reference. Good job.
Okay, all right.
London Penland of Eurolink joined us today as well. We look forward to seeing more of your vlog series, London. Thanks for sitting in with us today.
Yep.
Mike McNulty and Rick Peterson were here analyzing the FDI, and Carmen Vertulo brought us another informative edition of the Fastener Training Minute. Like to point out that today's shear strength topic was inspired, apparently, by the bearded nut, Baron Yarbrough.
Okay.
Somehow they communicated on a subject that touched on shear strength, and lo and behold, we got a fastener training minute out of it.
Takes me way back to university, engineering school. It's fun.
Only an engineer would say that shear strength equations were fun, but...
Oh, yes, well...
That's you.
That was me, okay. I did a whole thesis on it, actually.
The title sponsors of Fully Threaded Radio are Stelfast. For service you deserve and people you trust, it's Stelfast. And Brighton Best International. Tested, tried, true. Brighton Best. Fully Threaded is also sponsored by Buckeye Fasteners, BTM Manufacturing, Eurolink Fastener Supply Service, Fastener Technology International, InSQL Software, ND Industries, Parker Fasteners, The Worth Group, Volt Industrial Plastics, and Solution Industries, home of Solution Man.
And bobbleheads.
That's right. The bobblehead is back. Thanks to our sponsors, and thanks to each and every one of you for listening into the podcast. Get with us anytime. The email address is ftr@fullythreaded.com, and the Twitter handle is fullythreaded.
And if you have any friends that even think are remotely interested in the fastener industry who haven't yet listened to Fully Threaded, then make sure you tell them all about it.
Yes, we appreciate the boost, everyone. Plus, I don't think we did a plug for FCH on the podcast today, Bri. Get out to fastenersclearinghouse.com whenever the need comes up to find a hard-to-find fastener inventory item. And if you're looking to make new sales, develop new customers through the online fastener leviathan known as the FCH Sourcing Network, well, we'd be glad to talk to you. Finally, we're going to divert from a predominantly fastener-related theme to take a very quick look at a subject we've glanced previously, Bri. We've talked about solar, although not recently. We've talked about solar on the podcast, right? At some point?
I'm sure we have. Yes.
Well, it came back in the news because of the recent power outages in California, which for a couple weeks here in early October, everybody was reading about and talking about. You didn't lose your power, Bri, did you, in Chicago?
I was in Spain at that time. So I didn't really care. Okay.
Sometimes Chicago seems like it's a suburb of a Californian suburb in some ways. But, you know, a lot of people have a lot of thoughts on those power outages. And some people think that it was really a preemptive safety issue. Others feel that it was something else entirely. But whatever you think, the result was millions of people for a short amount of time lost power and everybody was talking about it. So thanks to our friends at PJ Media, which is a pretty good news aggregator site and commentary site, I caught this story discussing what happened to some of the people who had solar panels. The post begins, "Going solar isn't necessarily any protection from California's new, quote, planned power outages, and local residents and businesses are enduring a lot more than just a few inconveniences."
Okay, go on.
Bloomberg's Chris Martin has a story with one of my favorite headlines ever. Quote, "Californians learning that solar panels don't work in blackouts." So apparently many of California's would-be earth savers have no idea that just putting solar panels on their roofs won't mean they'll have power when the company switches it off. As Martin explains, most panels are designed to supply power to the grid, not directly to houses. During the heat of the day, solar systems can crank out more juice than a home can handle. Conversely, they don't produce power all night long. So systems are tied into the grid, and the vast majority aren't working this week as PG&E Corp cuts power to much of Northern California. So did you know this, Bri?
No, I didn't, but I suppose it sort of makes sense, actually, doesn't it? I mean,
oh, it does.
Not that I would have been secure in the knowledge that I was very holier than thou if I had one, I might say, but because it would all drain everything back into the grid in an attempt to try and prop it up.
Well, the sanctimony is one element to this whole thing, but more to the point in this case is having some juice when the grid is down. I mean, that's the real shock. I remember talking with Bruce Wheeler one point. He was fitting, I think, his New Jersey facility with solar on the roof, and they had a government plan that made that a really juicy offer. He couldn't not do it. He spent a lot to set it up, but in the end, it was a real no-brainer for him, and I wonder if he has thoughts on this. Of course, they never shut the power off there in New Jersey yet.
You reckon?
This story goes on. It says, the only way for most solar panels to work during a blackout is pairing them with batteries. The largest U.S. rooftop solar company said some of its customers are making it through the blackouts with batteries, but it's a tiny group, countable only in the hundreds. So millions lost power, Bri. And there were all kinds of stories reported on this. I'm sure most of our listeners know about that, but yeah, I wonder what some of the fallout of this is going to be. I think it's going to really resonate for a long time. And, well, let's just hope that in some small way it did something or other to improve some situation somewhere, somehow. I don't know.
Right. Maybe they have to redesign the controllers, which they never thought they had to do, because that would not be a normal possibility.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure about that, but I'll tell you, there's a joke that was circulating around when this was all going down. How did Californians light their homes in the days before candles?
Okay, you got me.
Electricity.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I don't know where it ends, Bri, but I do know where this episode ends, and that's right here, because that is going to put this episode of Fully Threaded Radio in the can.
This tour bus is moving on.
But don't worry, folks, we'll be back with another episode pretty soon. Hope you'll join us then. For Brian Musker, this is Eric Dudas. Get out there, sell some screws,
and leave the speedos at home, folks.
And we'll talk to you next time.
Fully Threaded Radio is a production of Fasteners Clearinghouse. Music provided by Audionautics.
Hi, everybody. JR with JHB Fasteners here. After our last Brian Musker compilation, I just couldn't help but wonder if there was some more audio gold hidden in those old episodes. Then it hit me. The man of a thousand okays is also a man of many talents, at least according to his esteemed colleague Eric. I'll let him tell you in his own words.
So very appropriately, the co-host on today's episode is none other than lifetime honorary Texan and fashion maven, Mr. Brian Musker, database guru who also has an intimate familiarity with very small fasteners lately, the most dangerous man in the online fastening game, poster boy of fastener taxonomy, and an all-round good guy, fastener wonk and code jockey by the code-slinging co-host of Fully Threaded, a man who's never questioned that fasteners are the most noble of all the industrial supply commodities. He's a duty-free import to the U.S. from Sydney, Australia, where he just completed duties as master of ceremonies at an exclusive black tie event. The man with the deep southern accent, along with the Isaac Asimov of the fastener software industry. He's a man who believes that online fastener radio is no place for violent rhetoric, the hardest working man in the online fastener sourcing world, and a guy who's never seen a cap screw he couldn't classify. He's also a guy who secretly envies the people who came up with the trilobular fastening concept. He's a man who appreciates a good clean data upload almost as much as a good sheep farming joke. He's a man who has no fear whatsoever of flying in an airplane full of fastener people, all dressed in fastener garb. He's the J. Robert Oppenheimer of the online fastener world. A man who enjoys deep philosophical questions about the taxonomy of fasteners. He's a man who believes that knowing the ASME standards is more than just good business. It's every citizen's duty. The godfather of the FCH scrubber software and all-round good guy. He's a gentleman. He's a scholar, JavaScript master, and musky fisherman extraordinaire, database guru, and fashion maven.
But, so who calls me dangerous?
Actually, I'm not at liberty to reveal that information for safety reasons.
Isaac Asimov, how did you get that in there?